Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line today is Ms. Phumzile Ngwenya-Mabila, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Ngwenya-Mabila, can you please tell us more about the Portfolio Committee that you're heading up and give us a bit of detail in terms of what your tasks are and if there's any specific targets that you want to accomplish in this term?
The Portfolio Committee on Rural Development is the one that on Rural Development and Land Reform is the one that oversees the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Initially, the department was known as the Department of Land Affairs, but in 2009, the Rural Development part was included, so it changed the name a little bit. So in the Department of Rural Development, there are various programs, but the major one is to address the issue of the land question. We know that during apartheid, some people have lost land, their land was dispossessed. They were taken from their land to other places. And also viewing the issue of the land ownership, that currently, the land is being owned by the minority. Other people, they don't own the land, especially those whose land was dispossessed. They don't have land. And also, it focuses on the issue of rural development, rural areas. When people were dispossessed their land, they were taken to rural areas which were underdeveloped, without services, you know. So this department is aimed at improving the service delivery in rural development and ensure that there's economic development in rural areas to avoid the urbanization of people leaving their homes from rural areas to towns. But these programs of land reform, it involves land redistribution, where in some instances, the government will buy land, then lease land to people who need land for farming, especially for farming activities. But on the other side, we've got the land restitution program, which addresses the issue of those whose land were dispossessed before the 19th of June 1913. Therefore, as a portfolio committee, we have to make sure that the department is able to execute its mandate. As we are aware that at the beginning of each and every year, or at the beginning of the term, the department will submit a strategic plan with an annual performance plan. The strategic plan is a plan for the whole 5 years, for the whole term, which indicates what is it that the department is going to do with regards to land reform, with regards to rural development. But each and every year, the beginning of each and every financial year, the department has to submit the annual performance plan, which is a breakdown or simplified plan on what is it that they are going to do, when and where, and at what cost. So it is our responsibility as mandated by the Constitution that we have to oversight. Firstly, we have to look at that budget which is being submitted to us, approve the budget as submitted, or we've got the right also to amend the budget. But moreover, our responsibility is to oversee whether the department is able to execute its mandate. Secondly, we are lawmakers as parliament. If there's any proposal, policy proposal, a bill from the department, we submit it to the portfolio committee and make the presentation. Then the portfolio committee must process the bill, conduct public hearings, report to parliament, then the parliament approve that report. If the parliament adopts that report, it depends whether that bill is a section 75 or section 76. If it's section 76, it must be sent to the NCOP for further processing. And thereafter, the bill is being passed, referred back to parliament is being passed, then going to the president for his assent. Therefore, after that, the department is able to implement that particular bill. But the other responsibility that we have as a portfolio committee, you know that the portfolio committee meetings are open to the public. So each and every time our meeting for the portfolio committee, our meeting day is every Wednesday. Every Wednesday we meet, our committee meetings are open to the public, for the public to understand what is it that we're discussing in our committee meeting. And furthermore, we have to ensure that if there's any legislation that is being tabled in the portfolio committee, we have to make sure that we conduct public participation. I think we are aware that there are lots of or few legislations, some of the legislations that have been challenged to court, either by the public or by the NGOs, CPOs, or other stakeholders, that there was no intense public participation. So it is our responsibility, as per the Constitution, that if there's any legislation that is being submitted to Parliament, before Parliament finalizes that legislation, it has to ensure that it engages the public. We call it in the public hearings. We go in various provinces to do those public hearings. We advertise in the newspaper. Other people have to make written submissions. Where we conduct public hearings, people come there and make the verbal presentation. So that when we consider, before we finalize the bill, we have to consider the inputs of the people. But we are aware that if people can make inputs, other inputs can be relevant to the bill. Other inputs cannot be relevant sometimes to the bill, but can be relevant to service delivery. So we refer those matters of service delivery to the relevant departments or to the relevant portfolio committee for processing.
Thank you very much for outlining those core responsibilities in terms of the portfolio that you're heading up, with all elements addressing land reform, and secondly, from a lawmaking position. I'd like to ask more on a personal note now, if you could share with us some of the responsibilities that come with being an MP and heading up such an important portfolio in this demanding role.
Yeah, I think some of the challenges that you have to attach, because each and every thing that is not be presented to the committee, it must come to you first. Then you have to consider it before you go to the committee. You have to read the document. You have to be sure preparing yourself for the committee meetings. You know, when conducting public hearings, you are the first person who must present that bill to the public. Although sometimes we share those responsibilities, but in most cases, the chairperson is the one that must play a leading role. I think you must be also a person who's willing to learn, because, you know, when you're deployed to the portfolio committee, sometimes you'll find a situation whereby you are a teacher by profession, but you have to chair a portfolio committee, maybe on science and technology, you know, or on health. So you have to just learn so that you understand, you know, what is happening in the health sector, what are the challenges. And also, I think being involved with the public, getting the issues from the public, especially when you do the constituency work, you have to understand what are the, you know, what are the challenges that people are facing on the ground, challenges which are related to your portfolio committee.
I'd like to ask you now, our program, Womanity, Women and Unity, is all about gender equality, which is increasingly a global focus. And as such, I'd like to ask you, what are your perspectives regarding women's empowerment and gender equality legislation?
There are legislations that have been passed to address the issue of gender inequality. And also other legislations, you'll find in most cases, I think that the Department of Government is taking that matter very seriously, because in each and every legislation, when there are committees or boards that are supposed to be formed, there's a clause that is specific in some of the legislation that out of the people who've been nominated should be 30% or 40% should be women, you know. And also when looking at the women representation in Parliament, I think the ruling party is the one that is leading on that one, because the issue of 50-50 is being practical. Although other parties are still struggling. And also when looking at the number of women ministers, you know, that are heading various departments, it shows that we are really progressing, although there are challenges that we still need addressing other sectors, but we are trying. Government is trying. But what is lacking, what I've realized that what is lacking is on the private sector, you know, because I make sure whether their policy have clauses that, you know, they should women, you know, the issue of the women CEOs, women managers and all that.
You are so right. When we look at the difference in terms of the statistics and the representation of women, in the South African context, in terms of women's representation in government, we stand at approximately 42% in comparison to men. But when you go across to the private sector, CEOs, it's less than 3% representation of female CEOs in private sector. So there definitely needs to be a shift in terms of legislation. We've seen that it's effective in the government sector, public sector, and that same legislation should almost be mirrored in the private sector to help elevate a woman's representation. Now I'd like to ask you, turning back towards your department, are there any specific programs that aim to aid women with respect to rural development and land reform?
You will understand that, especially in rural areas, most of the men are working in cities, people who are remaining at home or leading or who are heading the household in most cases are women. So when you go to the farms, you know, you'll find women. So the rural development programs, they are addressing women because in most cases you'll find that you have got these young farmers, people who are interested in farming, they need land, you know. The other one, the others are this women co-op, you know, whereby women are being, you know, drawn to one place as co-op, working together, you know, trying to empower themselves economically, being assisted by the department and being also funded for them to be able to pursue their goals. But also when looking at the issue of land restitution, most of the people who are benefiting out of that program is women. There's also one program of the NARS that young people who have been recruited, who have been trained different skills. You'll find young men and young women who are part of those programs called the NARS, the National Rural Youth Service Corps. So this program is inclusive. It's inclusive of both men and young men and women who are able to pursue other careers. But in most cases, all the programs of the rural development are inclusively include women. Because when coming to the CRPTs, which are the ones who are the core, they are working together with the ward committees. They are also inclusive. You find young men and young women. But there's no specific program that is specifically for women, but all the programs within the Department of Rural Development, they are inclusive of both men and women.
But what you're saying is purely because we tend to see greater numbers of women in rural areas that they supersede the ratio of women to men.
No, it's not the issue of the greater numbers, but that women should be part of the decision-making process, you know. We need to make sure that women are part of service delivery, women are part of these committees that have been established. Because in most cases, the decisions that have been taken in the NARSEC, in most cases, are the decisions that are related to the issues that affect women. It's not the issue of the numbers that women are more than, you know, are more than men. But women must be taken on board. You need to change, to transform this patriarchal system whereby women were left out, you know. Things were proceeding, men were taking decisions on the behalf of women, but you know, women want to be part of all the decision-making process, even at a younger age.
And you're right, women have definitely been hard done by in terms of perpetuation of negative culture, whether that's traditions, whether that's patriarchy. Can you share with us some of the gender challenges that you've personally experienced and managed to overcome in your career?
You know, some of the gender challenges is that sometimes, you know, when a person, if you're a chairperson, while in your committee you've got males, you know, or your committee is male dominated, they want maybe sometimes you to feel that as a woman you have to comply to their, you know, to their needs or to their requirement, or they can just make whatever to support what you are doing. Then secondly, the other issue is that you'll find a situation whereby there's still the challenge that women don't support other women in most cases, you know. If in a committee, women is the chair, but other members of the committee are males and female, you'll find a situation whereby the female chair is being mostly supported by the male, you know, colleagues instead of the female colleagues. Then the other issue is that in most cases, people can think that we get this position because of, we in other ways, are getting the positions not because we qualify, but, you know, because they want to just transform the issue of the word that is being used.
Would you say window dressing?
Yes, window dressing, or the issue of the affirmative. They used to call it, we call it affirmative, sometimes affirmative action. You know, sometimes where a person, you are being given a position while you don't qualify, you know, to hold that position, but because they have to put you there as a woman because it's a need or it's a requirement. But what, some of the challenges that we are experiencing, that in most cases the lack of support from the people you are working with, you know, lack of skills, you know, sometimes because you are not used to lead. In most cases, these things started at the school level whereby as women, we don't support each other. We're not given a responsibility. We are afraid to take a risk, you know. We are afraid to fail, but we forgot to understand that while learning, you have to do things and fail. When you fail, you learn to correct your mistake, and that makes you to grow. It empowers you.
Given your experiences, and you rightly said you've learned from your experiences and you have become empowered, given the experiences that you've had and that you've managed to overcome and empower yourself, what would be your advice to girls who want to follow in your footsteps and pursue a career in the political arena? How do we ensure that they don't have to deal with the same issues, the negative issues that you've had to address, that they come out stronger?
The first thing that is that you have to be grounded. You have to be a person's people, you know. Meeting with your constituency, understanding what is their need, you open your communication line. The issue of self-development, again, you have to learn so that what you have learned, you can be able to share with other people. You have to be focused. Sometimes, you know, when you experience some challenges, you will not be able to solve all the challenges to provide solutions, but you must be able to deal or to manage the challenges. Because when you work, definitely you experience some challenges. So don't be afraid to face these challenges. So you must be a person who takes a risk, you know, getting in the world that is unknown to you, but with an intention that at the end of the day you want to achieve what you want to achieve.
Thank you for that. Today we're talking to Ms. Phumzile Ngwenya-Mabila, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Takataka and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Balka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, on frequency 9625 kilohertz on the 31 meter band. Also available on DSTV channel 902. Today, we're talking to Ms. Pumzile Ngwenya-Mabila, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment of the conversation, we spoke about components on land reform, the development of land, service delivery in rural developments, land distribution. Ms. Ngwenya-Mabila also shared some of her views on legislation, recognizing the importance of representation of women in government, and some of the components that she had to navigate with respect to gender challenges, demonstrating a willingness to learn, to focus, for self-determination, and to be willing to take calculated risks. Ms. Ngwenya, staying with the topic of women, although women constitute 44% of the South African workforce, approximately 80% of the female labour force occupies low-skilled positions, according to Stats SA. What is your view of this, and is there a plan to change the situation, for example, like promoting free educational training for women, particularly for those who live in rural environments?
You understand where do we come from, you know, during the these days, our culture, in some of our culture, you know, when educating a woman was not taken as serious, but they were preferring to educate boys rather than a girl, because they would say that the girl is going to get married, so there's nothing more that can be invested than the girl, but the boy is the one that must, where the investment must take place. But the government is trying to address all those because you know that you have got this APET, the elder basic, the education for people who didn't have that opportunity to go to school in various communities. So the Department of Basic Education is the one that is leading that particular program, that there are afternoon classes which are being conducted in various communities, in rural areas, in urban areas, for those people to be able to learn. And also I think the support, the financial support that's being provided to government, to various institutions, the TVET, the universities, because most of the people were not able to proceed with their academic learning, because due to financial constraints, others, their parents were not working, they were not affording to pay those universities. But I think the intervention by the government will try now to change the tide, to change the situation around. And also in various institutions, government departments, and also here in Parliament, we've got the financial support for members, that you have the right to register with whatever institution, if you are willing, then Parliament will pay for you for those studies. So those are the opportunities that are aiming at empowering us, and we have to grab them and use them effectively, because those are the ones, even if you are old, you know, there's this lifelong, you must not say that I'm old, I can't study any further. You have to learn, because while you are in your community, even not in the working environment, you can be able to use the skill that you have acquired to empower other community members. That is why they're saying when educating a woman, you're educating a nation, because when learning, you're not learning for your own purpose, but you want also to assist other people. I think those interventions will try to assist, because even other private sectors now, you know, they're taking their employees to the service, what do they call it, to other institutions, for them to upgrade their skills. That will change the situation. That is why you see many women in the maritime industry, many women are part of are pilots, others they are engineers, you know, because the intervention by government to fund, to assist people who are willing to study, I think is the one that will assist us. Because even now in South Africa, if you are an orphan or your parents are not working, that cannot be, you know, an excuse that I'm not educated because my parents have died or my parents are not working, because all the departments have got bursaries. When you go to tourism, they've got bursaries for people who want to pursue their career on tourism. You go to transport, you go to education, there's Funza Lushaga for people who want to be teachers, you know. You go to health, there's bursaries for people who want to be radiographers, who want to be doctors. So opportunities are there, but we have to be willing and take and grab those opportunities for the situation to turn the tide, that at least women at the end of the day, they can be found in higher positions. In other instances, you find that the women enter the department being a cleaner, but at the end of the day, due to those support, the women will end up, you know, working in the office, because that woman was committed to upgrade herself so that at the end of the day, he can be promoted from the position where she was to another position, to another better position.
You're absolutely right. There is almost no excuse, given the opportunities that we have, to enable us. One of the questions I ask my guests on the show, who've all made tremendous achievements in their respective fields of expertise, is about the factors that have contributed to their success. Some people speak about the way that they've been brought up. Others talk about hard work, which I know you alluded to earlier. Some speak of perseverance. In your opinion, what have been the key drivers to your success?
Number one is that I can say that when I was in Standard 6, by then it was Standard 6. My mother passed away long ago. Then I was left with my father. Then 1976, my father passed away. Then we started to struggle. Then I tried. Then I go back to school. My aunt sent me to school. Then, unfortunately, I got pregnant while I was doing Standard 10. But I just reorganized myself, started to work, you know, working in shops, you know, working in farms, working in assisting with domestic work, all those things. But I've realized that no way, this is not going to assist me. I went back to school, then to do my grade 11 and my grade 12. Then after that, because there was no one who can, you know, find me to go further. I had good results. I obtained good results, in fact. But after matric, then I was employed as a temporary teacher in the same school where I was studying. Then I tried to save that money. Then the following year, I decided that no way, I must go to university without, you know, without having enough funds but the deposit for registration. Then I went to the University of Zululand, paid the deposit, the registration fee. But, you know, I was just praying that, God, what is going to happen if another man is being required? It means that I will be out of this institution. But God assisted me, you know. I got the, by then it was the Gangwane bursary. Then they funded me. I've done teaching. Took me 4 years, the bachelor in pedagogics, with a senior secondary teacher's diploma. Then I went back to the teaching field. I started there teaching, you know, involving in the communities, assisting communities, you know, the hard work, the commitment, you know. Then during the transitional period around 1995, then I was elected as a councillor, the TRC councillor. Then I continue, you know. There was no money by then because we were getting 145 per month. But we've been able to engage the communities, understanding the challenges facing the communities, you know, by then. Then until 1999, where I was elected to go to the provincial legislature. What I can say in brief is that, you know, sometimes you learn in a hard way. You have to experience some difficulties, then and understand what life is all about, what life needs, hard work, commitment. Then after you've understand the world's challenges, then you can be able to plan to pave your way out. And how do I come out of this challenges? How do I make myself a better person? How can I make other people the better people so that at the end of the day, people can be able to stand them for themselves. People can be able to be responsible, you know, stopping to blame other people. If you have failed, admit that I failed, then what next? What is it that I must do, you know, for me to proceed? Because failure doesn't mean that you are stupid, but you learn something. You have to just pull up your socks and do the thing different. So I think that is what makes me to be where I am. It's hard work, perseverance, engaging with the communities, you know, all those things.
You've certainly walked a difficult journey. And
it was really difficult.
You've also set an example of how to continue to educate yourself, no matter what your circumstances are, no matter how old you are, that it can be achieved and delivered. And I particularly like your sentiment of being able to understand the world challenges.
Yeah.
Once you understand that, being able to pave your way out of those challenges and to enable other people to stand up for themselves given the knowledge that you've gained. And there's a wonderful expression that's used quite a lot in Silicon Valley where they talk about failure, but they say it's okay to fail, just do it fast and move on to the next one. Given all of your experiences, the elements that you've had to endure, having sat as a counselor on the TRC, do you think that South Africa as a country is in the right place as you had imagined it to be?
Yes, today is better than yesterday, and tomorrow I think will be better than today. There are lots of achievements, you know. There are lots of opportunities. People have to just stand up, grab them, opportunities that were not there in our time. We even intend that if you become younger and be able to start a fresh life, because looking at the opportunities can realize that, you know, there's a difference. The people's lives have been changed altogether. Challenges are there because when working, challenges will be there. But challenges must not deprive us to, you know, to continue with our journey. We understand that we are free critically, but we need to make sure, work hard so that at the end of the day, we are also free economically. And there's nothing that can assist us to do that or to reach that goal without grabbing the opportunities that are there. People must stand up, they must work, you know, they must be responsible so that at the end of the day, you know, we reduce those queues in the social grants. People must be able to be economically independent, you know, whether you are a man or you are a woman, but everyone, so that at the end of the day, we contribute to the economy of this country.
Economic freedom is something that we have to do ourselves. It's something that you can't sit on the sidelines. We know all of the aspects of the social grants that we in South Africa are awarding to 17 million people. And the only way we can get our economic freedom is by moving forwards and empowering ourselves. Lastly, we are now coming to the end of the program. And as the show broadcasts across Africa, in closing the conversation today, could you please use this platform to send a message of hope to all those women in Africa that due to circumstances, gender equality might not be first on their agenda, but rather the daily struggle of taking care of their family, raising children, and putting food on the table for them is a more pressurizing reality?
What I can say to women is that women, there are lots of opportunities out there, especially in government in South Africa. There are lots of opportunities. Let us use those opportunities. Let's educate ourselves. Let us be willing to work. Let us be willing to learn. Let us not be afraid to take a risk. Take a risk. Must not be afraid. When you are there, you see what you can do, what you cannot do. Then other people will be able to assist you. Let's support one another, because let's share information, you know, that will assist others. You must not just be, you know, we need to share information, we need to make ourselves economically independent, and make sure that we are able to put bread on our table, we are able to feed our children, we are able to feed the nation.
Thank you very much for that important message and for sharing your insight and experiences with us today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Melka.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Mzile Ngwenya-Mabila, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development and Land Reform.